Hello and welcome to a new English edition of my podcast Helium Talk, das Kunstgespräch. My name is Jörg Heikhaus and my guest today is J-Bo Monk.
Helium Talk.
How's everybody? Good? Great. I'm great too. Last week I finally started to work on my own art again. It really is tough for me often to find the time for this. I escaped into the countryside up north where, as some of you may know by now, my wife and I have an old farmhouse, some land and a tractor, and, well, yes, my second studio is there too. It is a place where I find most concentration to work and where there are no distractions from the gallery buzz around me. Here in Hamburg at Helium Cowboy, we still have this great group show inside, a tiny kiosk installation we built right into the gallery called Lass mal Kornern, and that is exciting too, and you should definitely check it out. But this new body of work I just started with is something special too, and as usual will take up hours and hours of carving. The special and new thing with this one is that I'm working really colorful and that I'm using my woodcutting technique to bring out different layers of colors in the work itself after I've painted over it. Well, it may not make sense in words, but then again, most art doesn't. But you can go and find some progress pictures on my Instagram at Helium Cowboy. I'm aiming to show the first few of these pieces at an exhibition in Hamburg opening November 14 at the Affenfaust Gallery. You'll also find the dates and more info on that same Instagram thing. By the way, I'm just getting out of Facebook for real these days. I transitioned so I can still reach people who follow me there and get them on the Instagram bandwagon. I spoke about the uselessness of Facebook for me many times in this podcast, so I won't go into why I feel this is irrelevant for me. Oh, and I just saw that new documentary about Cambridge Analytica. Oh, wow. Even though that has no direct influence on the timing of my exit right now, but seriously, we should all get the fuck out of everything, including Instagram and WhatsApp and Google, etc. But hell, we won't, we can't. So let's each find the best channel we feel the least violated from. For me right now, that is Instagram. I may be proven wrong, but well, let's see. Alright, so my guest today, the artist J-Bo Monk. Is there really anything I need to say about him? He has been around some time, creating an intense body of work. He is showing internationally at great galleries for many years. His work is part of huge collections, such as the Dean Collection of Swiss Beats and Alicia Keys, and his early background is as exciting as his art. In short, he ran away from his home in France when he was 14, lived on the streets of Paris and Toulouse, made hip-hop music and street acting and, of course, street art, traveled a lot, came to Berlin in the 80s, a very different town back then, co-founded the magazine Style and the Family Tunes and the fashion label Ivy Daily, both in the 90s, and for me, he is simply one of the most influential artists of our times. Okay, as you can tell from this, I'm a huge fan of his work for a long time, so I was more than happy when he got in touch as he visited Hamburg and we could sit down at my studio to talk. He has got a lot to say and stories to share, and we probably just managed to scratch the surface of many topics, so I hope you enjoy the 59th episode of the Helium Talk podcast with J-Bo Monk.
Helium Talk.
I mean, I've always admired you as a painter, but you're also doing these installations when you walk around, this taking your environment and altering it and seeing different things in it. And I think, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that is something that you don't plan on.
No, I'm a maniac. I mean, I do things like that because I need to.
Yes,
I had that dog. If you're talking about the thing that I do outside, and every morning I had to go to my, you know,
to
the round, and then, you know, you're there and the dog don't care much about you on the point, and I started. It's always been there. I'm a homeless guy at the beginning. I came out like 9 years homeless, and everywhere where I was, I tried to make it more cozy or something, where in every hide that I was slipping in.
Yeah.
And then I changed things. It was always there. I always tried to show that I'm there, actually. Mm-hmm. And it's also what graffiti was in my feelings. And
yeah, but I mean, graffiti was something that that's different. I think it's still, but I like these little interventions when you just walk around.
I call it like virgule in French, which is just commas.
Okay.
And I believe like everyone didn't see it so much. But on one point, they're going to see it. Yeah. And on one, the day after that, they come back again. They're going to look for more. Mm-hmm. And this is what's interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And I think I always will be fighting against the ignorance of about the around. Mm-hmm. And this is what I do.
Yeah. But it also is taking, I mean, you take this sometimes to the gallery walls or exhibition walls in your artworks. It's like the...
I did it in Los Angeles because they wanted like that, but I don't do it normally. Mm-hmm. It's completely two different worlds. Mm-hmm. What I love to have outside and what we could call Landhard or mm-hmm. things like that, is this is for nothing. Yeah. It's just for the purpose.
Yeah. Not just you know, for the moment. And yeah, and also for, I mean, if people find it and see it, that's good.
Well, I had some people there like, oh, where it is now? I just put it yesterday. But I don't know. You know, and that's completely free. Or that like and this is also a position of solitude. Mm-hmm. Like when I'm there I'm solo. And this is a nice thing. So when it happens at, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning, nobody is in the park. Or maybe another dog guy and well, that's funny too.
Yeah.
And then I'm living directly on the park. That was normal to do it. Now when I go to Portugal, when I go, I'm more free actually when I do that in nature for my art than when I do that in my studio. Or purpose of a show, or this is what I completely changed right now. I'm going out of the scene, which is...
You're also not doing graffiti anymore.
I did things because friends did. And I go graffiti like people were playing basketball outside or things like that, just for the fun.
Yeah.
No, I never had a purpose to be famous or a purpose to be showing my name. I never take a name. I was doing characters to help. That's it. I like the fact that we were outside and not, and if I was living outside and these people were on the same playground.
Yeah.
And that's it. So the connection was there.
So when you came to Hamburg, you lived. We were to Berlin. That's where you moved from France directly. Or
was no, I did.
Do you ever talk about that? I mean,
yeah, sometimes, but it's not relevant so much. Mm-hmm. I mean, I left my home when I was 14, and from that point on, at like till I was 19, and like so 5 years of homeless.
That's the time you traveled,
but also rich homeless because I was always looking for a girl and things like that. So it was not the hardcore homeless, much more the punk kind of.
Yeah, I was basically just a traveler in a way then.
Yeah, and I did from nowhere to South Africa, things like that. And I was everywhere. A lot of Africa I did.
Okay.
Now I don't remember all of it, but. and you know, if these days, I don't know, so much people doesn't interested about the past stories, you know? It's like everything is so fast, so swapping, you know, so.
Yeah, no, I think that is something that is happening these days. I mean, because everybody's on the internet constantly and this, like you're being fed news all the time. So something new is always happening. And I see that often that it's also difficult with artists to find out that I kind of discover, you know, like online. And I think, okay, that's super interesting. Where does this person come from? Sometimes I don't even have a website. Oh, it's very hard to find something. You're kind of, I'm hunting for scrap. I'm a very curious person. That's one of the things that drive me. And so when I'm interested in somebody and I try to find something out and it's, even then, sometimes you find links to juxtapose, and they're not saying anything about the background or where they come from. Maybe they say they're from Germany, or I don't know. But that's not, you know, very useful information.
It's gonna be consumed. You know, like even the search that you're talking about, it's just a consumed search. Like on point, you find, you eat it, that's gone, and there's no continuity into that. I'm completely agree with what you say about internet, which is. A place where you can do everything. Like nowadays, everything, you are a creative or you are nobody. Mm-hmm. Before in my hip hop times, you were a DJ, you were someone. After that, you become a cook, then you are someone. And after that, you become a playboy, then you are someone. And after that, you become an artist, a rock star. I lost all those vocabularies.
Yeah.
I don't understand it anymore. Maybe now old enough to be an asshole, but it's not what I'm bored about it, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
about all this?
I think it's not probably not about being an asshole. I think it's about setting your own personal priorities straight. And I think when you're a young person, it's more difficult. You're also more relying on what you get as a feedback. But as somebody who's in a way in the public, like everybody now is, I mean, most people can still choose whether they want to be in the public. I mean, my wife, for example, she is in the public when she is going out or when she's with me. She does not do Instagram. She has a Facebook account. We just celebrated 10 years of friendship on Facebook. Thank you, Facebook, for reminding me. But, you know, so she just went on Facebook because somebody said, well, maybe you should go on Facebook. So she has, like, I don't know, 35 friends who are really friends. Mm-hmm. She never checks it. She's never there. She doesn't even have a portrait for her. So she chooses deliberately to not be public. Mm-hmm. But everybody else who chooses to put their work out and show photos and stories, that moment you're in a way, you're a public person. Because you choose to share it, you know.
I started to quit Facebook more and more, but like you got also a lot of people who are fans, and then they always try to get you back in there somehow, like in Instagram the same way. But I'm losing followers since day one.
But I was thinking because I mean we just, you know, I mean, I think everybody who knows me knows that my heart is in for St. Pauli, for the football club of St. Pauli, and we had this amazing derby.
Congratulations.
Yeah, which was amazing. And I think 5 years ago, when I was still on the Helium Cowboy account, probably my personal account, but on the Helium Cowboy account, I would have probably just ignored it because, you know, I don't want to polarize people because I'm a gallery, which is, I mean, everybody knows that. We have St. Pauli mugs and everybody knows me, but, you know, just, I didn't think so. But this time it was like, you know, I was actually celebrating it online too, you know, and that means I might have lost a bunch of followers too, but I don't know. A friend of mine just who works for Facebook, who works for Instagram, he told me it's just about volume. And volume is not five, volume is 5,000, you know, and everything else is just.
Yeah, but this is not anymore a quest. You have the discover at the time, you know, the discover of Facebook, the thing that everything you could do with that to be famous, to be, not famous, but to be present. For a lot of people, this is the only chance that they had to contact. Like if you live in, I don't know, in Erfurt or something, and you want to reach a gallery in Berlin or even more, it's the only chance. And I understand that completely.
Yeah, absolutely.
But now it's like it's too easy now somehow. So it's like it lost from its kind of magic. Mm-hmm. Same with Instagram. All the things gonna come and goes. It's just the way of life, right?
Yeah.
And I think it's going away, and it's a good thing to be. Yeah. I think it's also going to be good because we have so much artists everywhere, which is now it's quite boring art. I mean, I was talking to a musician from Korea. She was learning as a violin in the, and she said that's incredible the difference between the conservatory in music, where they have to know how to play Wagner, to play Chopin, to everything by heart. And then you look at everything in art, nobody knows how to draw, really. I mean, like they do whatever they think it is, they call it style.
Yeah.
And they forget that Picasso was perfectly a drawer before he did that. Or like, and that is the level of art is really me inclusive. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm better than anyone else.
No.
It's, we are really low. I mean, you could, I had the chance to go to China, like to Hong Kong, and see the work, what they do. But like, they know how to paint Van Gogh by heart. Mm-hmm. They know how to paint, you should work a bit more, guys.
I have this friend. He's an artist from Russia, and he studied in St. Petersburg, basically, you know, sort of before Perestroika and before everything changed. And he's classically trained in basically everything. And when you went to his name is Alexei Mir is his name, like MIR,
like the space station,
the Russian space station. And he has developed his. He can do all these paintings in all these different styles. He did a Leonardo da Vinci drawing, with his left hand, even though he's a right hand, you know, so things like that. It's not his art that he's working with. And he developed like a totally different style that he's working with now and or for the past 25 years. But it always amazes me when people are actually really classically trained and when they know how to do things. I think a lot of art today is copy and paste.
Yeah, but we're losing subcultures, you know, like the subculture was what there before, you know, if you were rock and roll, you had like your hair like that, your leather jacket, everywhere, you know, all those iconic things were there, and then it became what hip hop, et cetera, et cetera. And at one point, everything was being used by the big corporate and then use it as an advertising system. The people were doing these kind of things before, they are now working by the advertising companies to do this kind of thing. So it kills everything. And now we have like a bunch of confiture of everything. So it's not only copy and paste, it's just because they don't believe that they copy and I don't believe that they paste anything. They just, it's zeitgeist, how they call it. But it's like, nobody make the way, you know, it's so easy and so fast. And you're always gonna have like a little group of 100 people who like you, and then you believe that's the end of the day, you know? And if you believe that you do that for that, then don't do it.
Yeah.
It's definitive. Please don't touch your it's just narcissism. Poor.
Yeah, I think it's a good portion of becoming an artist, you know, so has also something to do with that. I think it also, you know, it can be helpful. I mean, I believe there's a lot of artists out there who don't like publicity and is like don't even like to exhibit their work. I think there's still this battle, but I see that it has gotten more and more kind of deliberate. You know, like I was at the opening of you know, Rick Reinking, the collector, Mamberg, he has opened his wood art institute. It's like in the countryside in Hamburg. It's a magical place. It's like an old school, built a park and everything. And when you go through his collection, which spans a long time, because I mean, even though he's still quite young, he started collecting very early, and it's different things. It's from today. It's a little bit street art graffiti in there, but it's also tribal art in there and conceptual art in there. And he kind of mixes it together into something that really works well, you know, when you go through that. And there are a lot of artists that I've even never heard of, even though they're quite famous, and that's also okay. But they all combined in one thing. They somehow, I have the feeling they have something to say, and these are important works. They're not deliberate.
But this is the part of him. This is actually his collector part to have his vision through the work of other one. That's why this looks like that. Because he made like a DJ.
And that's what I think is I mean, for me personally, you know, one aspect of getting older and also in this business, one of the beautiful aspects of getting older in this business that I have so much that I had the opportunity to choose from things that are not really existing anymore. Mm-hmm. A lot of artists that I have on my walls at home, they're not working as artists anymore, maybe, or just doing something completely different, or maybe I don't even like what they're doing now, whatever. Yeah. So, but there's like, it's, you know, sort of, I have the feeling I understand what's happening today. Very good, very well. I see the need of a lot of artists, and also with Helium Cowboy, when I started Helium Cowboy, that was one of the basic intentions of Helium Cowboy, being able to make artists visible that are otherwise overlooked. Mm-hmm. You know,
overlook is a big it's a big word in our world right now. They all believe they're overlooked, and they all believe that they need to make a place for the future or something, or like to make a mark. Mm-hmm. And this is like, I'm so far away from that anymore.
Then again, you of course look back at a career that is also very, I don't know whether it's the right word, but diverse. I mean, you've made this magazine style.
That's
a long time. You did fashion.
I did all the jobs you couldn't imagine, from dishes washer till bars, music, theater. Mm-hmm. I did everything because I'm interested in the fact of learning something. Mm-hmm. So that's why I learned to paint. I learned to paint with oil. I learned to paint with spray cans. I learned to paint with, or I learned to draw with whatever. Mm-hmm. I learned to draw with the wind. I learned to draw with things like that. I learned to work my composition quality in a magazine, like to design or something, to do graphics. I learned to make some phone types. Soon as I did one, it's for me enough. I don't have to stay there. Mm-hmm. And I'm not interested in reproducing. I think my most important thing in my life is to be better than yesterday in a form. I don't succeed every day. This is not like like I am Superman or something, but it's the more important thing. I want to be more clever than I was before.
Yeah.
And I need to provoke. I need to make mistakes. I need to make a lot of things. Now, like all the work that you know from me, I'm completely away from it. Now, you will see, I'm not doing show no more. Yeah. I'm sitting in my little place now and I'm going to hide completely.
Yeah.
And I changed that because I'm disappointed, mm-hmm. not about the people who like what I do or whatever, and they suddenly will ask, what are you doing now? You're stupid. Or, mm-hmm. but because of the lack of open your head wide to understand what the world where we in is. Mm-hmm. And this is the big problem that I always have. Like everything I do now is about the disappearing of humanity. Mm-hmm. About artificial intelligences, which are coming in every form, in your iPhone, whatever is going in there. And the fact that we are becoming stupid tools mm-hmm. of something with even more stupid than us, with just a technique, mm-hmm. which we lost all the poetry that we always have. And this is my big quest. Mm-hmm. And I'm there. I'm so upset about it that I'm now like closing every doors and blocking so much people on Instagram as well, just because I don't want to be disturbed, not because I'm against them. And this whole thing, I think it's in every one of us. Mm-hmm. We are in the creative business because they confronted with that, with the fact of making money mm-hmm. to pay the rent. Mm-hmm. They have kids or whatever. And they are in a world where nothing is more hard than you have to be a big high fish if you want to be somebody.
But I mean, you had a quite a good run in recent years by, I don't know, with exhibitions and really in galleries where a lot of the artists would lick their fingers to actually even be in a group show.
But you know, you have to go there and ask and do. It's not coming from running.
No, sometimes you have to get, there's a question, of course, that a lot of artists always ask, how do you get into a gallery? And me running a gallery, I mean, I'm not getting into any, too many galleries. Not like I know these people, and it's like the doors open immediately. There's a lot more that it takes. And I understand that because I'm also in the position, or I've been in the position for many years to choose what I want mm-hmm. to show. And, mm-hmm. and I think this also has changed these days. I'm pretty sure that most of the galleries, actually, when they are starting to get interested in you, can look up how many followers you have on Instagram, because that is also marketing power that you bring to
definitely
the table. But I mean, you had, so it's hard to tell how you get into your first galleries. I think, I mean, it's probably you had a name before, at least in a scene before you had your first gallery show. It's not like you just...
That was a Berlin thing. The first gallery show, I was jumping. There was Sacred Culture.
Yeah.
And I was jumping because one artist didn't came.
Yeah.
And then Johan van Nansenauer asked me if I want to do something. It was the first show. I never did a show before. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't have no ideas about what it is or why. And then this tricked me by, oh, let's do that. I never did it before, so let's do it. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes what it is now. Mm-hmm. I lost the style. I mean, I don't lose, but I quit style in a way of working for that. Mm-hmm. It was a guy who was working at another point and started, I mean, the magazine. And then I became my own machine of doing creativity. Mm-hmm. And I'm a very intense creative guy. I mean, I work a lot in a lot of things. And then it was easy, you know, if you work a lot and you're always going to find something to make a show. Mm-hmm. And then from that point on, Secret Culture was the gallery who pushed me up, mm-hmm. definitely. And then we had problem, and because you feel how you're saying, it's always an emotional thing, you know? Mm-hmm. You're like, I always said, if you go with galleries, it's like, or if you do an exhibition, it's like you are giving the chance to anyone to fuck you up, mm-hmm. in one word. And if you're not resistant to that, then don't do it. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I learned about it. So you give, it's completely masochistic.
Yeah.
Because you're always going to find somebody who will say, oh, that's been being done before. Mm-hmm. This is the way it is. And that was the time where galleries were like also young in the way, mm-hmm. of working with artists. It's not the big old school gallery who knows how to build the market or something. They were the same debutant that I am. Mm-hmm. And then you got the trouble. Like the people that, oh, this one says more, I go to this guy, and then you're suddenly alone. And then you ask yourself, hey, what's going on? Hey, why we don't work together no more? You're not interested in what I do no more? And you talk to your father, you know, and your father say, yeah, you're not good no more, sir. So I was pissed.
Keeping the balance. I understand both angles. I also think that this, funny you mentioned that like the traditional galleries that, you know, so probably the really large, important and influential galleries are still not urban art galleries or galleries that have that background. But it's still like a traditional gallery model that works. And there's, of course, people come from money, but also from a background. And these are the people that still drive the art markets in a way. But I think that and Circle Culture, you know, I think they started shortly after I've had my first exhibition. See, it was an interesting time at the time for this kind of galleries. Mm-hmm. But it also, and none of us, and that's, you know, where I'm basically including everyone now, and not, mm-hmm. you know, sort of being, saying it very generally, we try to do something differently that has already been done for some time. None of us really had a clue how this could work. And I think one thing that we've never really looked into is we're all cool, we're working together, it's no difference, we're on the same level. But at some point it kind of collapsed in that sense that there was not much loyalty from both sides. Mm-hmm. And for me today, I'm always saying this when I talk to people about this, there are many reasons why I do very little shows, but one of the reasons is the people that I'm going to do shows with, I have to trust them and they have to trust me. And mm-hmm. building this kind of relationship takes time. And that's time I probably don't even want to spend or have anymore, sense. Yeah. So I think that is something that has never been learned in this era of galleries. And that's when it simply happens that you just look for who's more successful, who has more friends or followers, who brings the better clients and all these things. And you're just going with an artist. I went with artists for 3-4 shows without selling anything or a significant amount, just because I was believing in that. And I think that is something that is very hard to find today.
Yeah, because it's maybe not the same thing. Like if you are selling art, you could do it like really hardcore. You just have to see Koenig in Berlin. Mm-hmm. It doesn't care much about sales like crazy.
Yeah.
And that's it. So there is like also a kind of love about the creativity of someone, about, mm-hmm. I can show you that this, the shit, what it does is fantastic. Nobody did that before, or he's doing the same way like this guy did before, and whatever. And then you have a love story going on with mm-hmm. this as a gallerist, I believe. And then, like, I got like these guys from Brooklyn, from Bette Stuyvesant residency. Mm-hmm. They're not gallerists. They are like, they do this residency because they love.
Yeah.
And maybe that's more what you're going to find for yourself, because this is something where we're just talking about quality and not talking about the problem of selling it.
Yeah.
This big thing. You know, if you want to sell and make as an artist, mm-hmm. then you have to be a fucking prostitute. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you won't do it. If you like expect that to say, I'm king of God or the mm-hmm. son of God and yeah. Everything what I do, they're going to find me one day. Forget that. This is completely wrong. It's just like you have to do so much work and you have to go so much in the US, they say it, you have to be easy to work with. Mm-hmm. When I hear that, it's already I'm like, oh, my hair goes up, you know? And then say, no, fuck that. I think Ben Venom said that.
Yeah.
And Ben is a great guy.
Yeah.
He's a teacher as well, so that's why I say that.
Yeah.
But no, exactly the opposite.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's it also kind of depends on who you're working with, and sometimes it might be true today, truer than, you know, that. And I also understand what Ben means with that, but he's also of course pitching the idea to galleries that an artist is easy accessible and it is easy to handle. I think that's not important for me. I think artists should just be however they are. And if I ask an artist, do you want to take part in the show and you want to send me some work, and it's just because I don't feel like, that's fine. I don't take it personal if an artist isn't. But once you make that commitment that you're working together, like for an exhibition or anything, I find it beautiful if there is a good relationship. I know that there might be, the next step might be already just around the corner, and there's a gallerist who sees, wow, he's doing so well now with this exhibition, and so I'm going to sneak in, or I'm just be really blunt and go in there and take this artist out of that. That's fine. It's just part of the business. But you know, sort of. The only thing that I expect from that artist in that moment is that he just gives me a call and says, "Yuck, I get a new place. I get a new baby. Sorry."
Let's just stay
friends, have a drink, you know, because that's these relationships is what make life important, not the individual artwork. When I look at the artwork on my wall, I mean, my wife and I, we've been, you know, so I'm collecting. I mean, it's just natural because I run a gallery. I'm an artist. I swap with other artists. I have bought from my shows. I buy from other shows, but I don't buy works for 10,000 or 20,000 euros or so. But there's a lot of artists on my wall, a lot. And with some of them, I had beautiful relationships and they're not there anymore. I still like the work. With some of them, I have very early work, which is now so much better. But that's my story with this person. So that's why I like it so much. That's why it's not going to get off my wall, no matter what this person does. And so for me, it's always about the relation that I, and the relationship that I build with these people. And that is the one thing that you will not be able to exchange. Just say, coming to Hamburg, coming around here, having a drink with me, no matter what happened in the career, we worked together, you went to, I don't know, Circle Culture, then to another, whatever you did, that's totally fine. It's just, you know, so it's one side. But the relationship that we have, that's the valuable thing, because that, there's no price tag to that.
Yeah, of course. There is also on the way to a career. This is the word also that we're talking, like this career, suddenly, even the career of a gallerist or the career of an artist. There is like moment, they're going to be hard. They're going to be hard to choose. And you make mistakes. I did mistakes a lot of time. And I lost a lot of opportunities because I was maybe too loyal or not loyal at all. And I'm like the other one. Mm-hmm. The only thing is you have to know it. If you don't know it, if you're still on your cloud and you believe that everything is on your way, then you have no chance. Mm-hmm. It's so complicated outside.
Yeah.
And my time is done, you know, so I'm like over the top. Now it's only downhill. And that downhill means you don't have to pedal so hard, you know.
But so you had these exhibitions and everything, and now you basically just you decided you, I mean, you're still creating art, but you're not interested in the gallery exhibition circus for now.
There is like a big idol for me, human that I absolutely love, is David Hemmons, which is an artist from New York now, and he's like, I don't know, maybe 80 now. And it's somebody who never had a website, somebody who never, I think, don't even have a gallery. It's working with one guy is buying all his work, and he's absolutely the king of the world for me.
Yeah.
I know. And that's it. He does his art, and I got enough fans and collectors who will be interested to buy sometimes mm-hmm. something from me. Mm-hmm. Of course, my price are going a bit higher with mm-hmm. that, definitely. But I'm not looking for too much money. Mm-hmm. I'm not greedy at all.
Well, I mean, for me, I mean, as a, I've had you in a bunch of shows here, and I think I sent you a mail 3 months ago, 3.5 months ago, and you should send me an invoice. Mm. You know, you haven't even done that.
No,
and I don't think it's because you're super rich. It's just something that it's not you.
I got the answer for that. Yeah. I just had this crash, bike crash, and then they put me on the CT to look at my brain and everything. And I saw that my left part of my brain was so small.
Yeah.
This is where the money is.
Yeah.
And my right brain was like so enormous that I was like scared when I saw it. But now you understand.
Yeah, I don't mind keeping the money, but I mean, I also don't
I
mind.
Know what you mean. I got this guy had like a show in Boston for a long time.
Yeah.
And he had still work from me that I don't remember.
Yeah.
And I saw him last time in New York. He came extra from Boston down, and we had like a film. And he say, "Dude, I owe you $5,000, mm-hmm. but I can't give it to you because I'm broke now."
Okay.
And I said, "Right, then you owe me the. That's all."
Yeah.
And I'm not. And it's not because I'm running with money, so much money that I can't do it. You know,
yeah.
I'm not. It's not my kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it happens.
Yeah.
And I have other, every work that's been done by me is dead.
Yeah.
Completely dead. I don't care about what's happening with a piece that I've done. Mm-hmm. They're just gone.
Mm-hmm.
And on that point, it's like, you know, if it's money coming, that's nice. And I think my karma point is big.
But so when you finish a work and you show it, then it's for you, it's cool,
you
and
can
it's gone.
Burn in front of me. Yeah. I don't care at all.
Yeah, I have some. I mean, not well, some of them. I have a similar approach to that. I mean, once I'm done, once I release it basically from the studio, it's done. And
yeah,
there's nothing I can do about it anymore.
I'm sure I can do it better, and I'm sure because of that, it's just a level of things.
Yeah.
And when I'm gonna be like 99, mm-hmm. Maybe you're gonna have like a good one. But mm-hmm. I'm completely not. I'm not sure if I'm good or if I'm bad or whatever. That doesn't.
But are you satisfied when you finish a piece and you just say, okay, that's it, that's what I wanted to, you know?
No, this is a long process. First, mm-hmm. I turn it over, and then it takes like, I let it go like mm-hmm. two or three before I post it.
Mm-hmm.
It takes me like, I don't know, 1 week. Look at it again, and then on that point, you see if it's all right or not. But even there, mm-hmm. I work again on it and sometimes I kill ones, you know, it's like they all go over as just mm-hmm. about this little thing. But if I'm sexy, I'm never satisfied, this definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I'm always trying to do something more, like for me to go on a fair would kill me.
Yeah.
Because that's why I don't go there. But mm-hmm. if I just come, the first artist that I see, I will take him time to look at what he's done and make so much, he did this way, or analyze all the work,
mm-hmm.
then the next one is going to kill my brain because I'm going to do the same effort. Yeah, it's going to be the same effort from me to not try to understand what is there. Mm-hmm. And so I quit.
I've actually learned that pretty well through all the fairs that I've visited, even before I did the first fair with the gallery. But then I kind of learned to ignore things. Just walk over a fair I mean, like when you're on an art fair with the gallery, you know, you want to take a look around, but there's so much else you have to do, especially when you're responsible for more or less everything. So I'm always the last person from my gallery, from the artists that we have there and the staff and everything that just says, oh, I'm going to take a look around. So it might be the last day of the fair, but I'm, of course, racing across this fair all the time to go to the loo, to have, I don't know, at that time I was still smoking, have a cigarette, mm-hmm. get some food, meet somebody outside, pick somebody up, I don't know, whatever, take a phone call. So I've basically seen the whole fair, but just walking through.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And right. then there are certain parts that stick in my mind that I want to go back to. So that is a very automatic selection of how I approach an affair. Then what happens with this way is, did you see that work? That was amazing. And I'm like, I didn't even see, I didn't even know the artist was here, you know? And so I think I think it's to protect myself from what you said, which is dangerous. I mean, if you get you know, stuck in that, I can do that as well. When I was really young, when I was in school in Cologne, and I knew then I wanted to become an artist. It took some years until I got to a point where I actually called myself an artist. But at that time, with my best friend, we went to the Museum Ludwig in Cologne because they had, I think, 3 or 4 Dalis, Salvador Dali. Mm-hmm. That was the first artist that actually struck me. And I knew everything about him. I read his diaries. I saw all these Louis Buñuel films and stuff like that. I was into that. Mm-hmm. And that's how I'm still today. If there's something that really excites me, I'm going deep into that. That means my school in total wasn't very good results, but the stuff that I really liked and really cared about, mm-hmm. I was very good in, you know. So
I'm similar somewhere there.
So, and my friend and I, we spent hours just sitting in front of a Dali painting. Hours. Mm-hmm. And went back next weekend, or I have to go back. So, beautiful. And I totally understand that. And nothing else in the museum could excite me until, you know, sort of I had the next fix, you know, for another artist, Edward Kienholz. Mm-hmm. There was this installation from Edward Kienholz in Museum Ludwig for all the time. Mm-hmm. And it was big and huge.
Yeah.
I never really actually got into that. And then at one point, you know, sort of, you know, I stood there and looked at it and I was just like, okay, well, I have to take my time with this. Whoops. Wow.
My wife? No.
No. I should turn. I mean, that is the...
I got something similar, but when I was young, my father was quite a brutal father.
Yeah.
And he always like bump, you know, like hit me.
Okay.
And I was not prepared about the hit because you're always coming from the nowhere, you know, it's like ding duck. And that was there. I had like a big on the face. So I became to be like very observative about what's going to happen next.
Yeah.
And this thing is so in my nerve now and all my thing that I'm always observing everything. I can't stop. So it's a sickness, I believe. So I can't stop. I can't filter. That's why I can't go to a fair or something because it's getting inside. I can't stop that. I look at everything, and then on one point, so much in myself that I have to do the output. So I do output in everything kind of thing I can, even if it's like bicycle or it's an output form. And so I'm like completely in this kind of filter, and this filter make the art that I'm doing. But that was like the ground is my father was beating me and had to try to escape all these things. It was my ground to observe. So it's the same way, like when I go to what you had with Dali, I had with Bacon.
Mm-hmm.
Because in Bacon, I saw exactly what I thought, what I felt.
Yeah.
And that was like the big revelation, definitely.
Yeah, also one of the artists you can get completely lost in, Francis Bacon.
Last night I was sleeping by a friend, and he got a cat, and this cat was like sleeping in these cat trees, and it goes like a little hole and in there, and I dreamed completely that I was inside all the time. So it's like I'm always confronting about just what I've saw, and I transform it in something. I can't keep it for me. And this is like all my homeless time.
Yeah, but I mean, okay, when you seem to have had a very, you know, sort of complicated or difficult, you know, sort of upbringing and growing up, but no matter how you grow up, I think that is often a very influential phase for most artists.
Definitely. I'm not regretting anything or what I am now is because of that. And that's beautiful. I got a beautiful family. I didn't bite anyone. I didn't hit no one. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
But there was like Marco Grassi said to me once that I'm actually a violent abstract painter.
Okay.
And I never believe, but I'm quite narrative in everything what I do. But I never be violent in what I give, I believe. But I'm a violent, emotional violent, definitely.
But you may release it on the canvas and on other stuff and not only human beings.
But there's like things that I learned also that if you can go your life like, I'm going to die young, you know, and go everything you feel. But this is a position where you're looking at just at yourself. And for me, I'm very altruist. I'm very interested about the social world, about the people that are ignoring the other one, about all these positions in the world, about the rich and the poor, about the verticality of the society is another thing. Because I was on both. I'm very comfortable now. You know, I got a good flat. I got a place to work. I can go if I want to Japan, things like that. But I don't use it as a satisfaction. I use it as a tool to learn more. So that's why it was always something there, a more scientist kind of thinking would bring from all my background that I have. So that's what I'm doing. It's just that. I'm just a scientist. I'm nothing more than, not than the good one, but like I'm a scientist more than painter or something.
Yeah, I mean, if a strong painting, there's a lot of either story or research or background in it, even though you would not necessarily see it. I think I like artists that actually look into, I mean, where you can feel that they've been looking not just into a topic and to realize something or make a statement on, I don't know, climate change or whatever, but just really go into it. And some things are very simple and some things are very, very easy. And something, if you look at a painting and you understand it and you see, okay, it's nice, but there's maybe so much more.
I call it following trends, just to make yourself on the waves, which is there, which what we did when hip hop was there. We follow the same thing now. These kind of waves are not a musical, like a music kind of styles, and now it's like your gender or you're not gender, or it's completely hip to be not what everyone expecting, just because of to be someone different than the one before. You know, like this is a typical classical kind of society believing. If like it's even hard for the people that really have the problem of being gender, like to have a problem of gender, like to change, and there's like a few that were like really in problem, but like there are so much hipsters who are going the same kind of bisexual life, which is there. I don't give a fucking shit about it. I'm not interested. I'm born man or I'm born woman. Like you have your problem with that. That's your business.
Yeah.
And like to make it now like a real trend, which is gonna be taken already by all the corporate.
Sure.
They're just like, well, guys, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, it's. I mean, that's where the in the end of the day, it's always a market that's being satisfied with all these things that we're kind of.
And it's, if you go to the core of it, like even now, the green wave that we have now, the green capitalistic wave that you now created, it's of course maybe a big better change for hers, and to follow that and to care more about hers is definitely a good thing. But it's the only thing that we're doing is to make more in the problem and just in another color. The big things in the world would be to restrain yourself. This is what I always try to say to US people because they talk so loud. Please restrain yourself and understand that you're not alone.
Yeah.
And that will be enough, but nobody does.
Yeah. Yeah. But this, of course, there's a lot of attention on these topics, which is in a way which is good, but it's everything is being overdone and oversaturated. In the minute it gets interesting, and I think I think it's pretty good that you as an artist can choose that you refuse to do that. And I have a bunch of artists that I actually follow, they don't know me and I don't know them, but I really appreciate how they're actually dealing with this even in this online world today, and they have my full respect, but also of course there's always the chance that if you do something at that moment when it's popular, that might be your entry point into career. And I mean I think it's still very, very difficult as an artist to actually make money with your art. I think the two of us, we're privileged that we can live off art that we're doing. And we have no security that this might still be the case in 2 years or 5 years and 10 years. But if you do this for some time, I'm not dependent upon 500,000 followers on Instagram. And I'm not dependent. I mean, I have good collectors, I have a base, I have five, I'm rooted in what I'm doing, and you have the same, but it's always going to be difficult to become, you know, so somebody who can actually live off that with art. And I have the feeling today it's very important for many people just to see it's, you know, so if I follow also all these things, then, you know, I might actually make an entry to that and to that scene, you know.
But it's what we call information also. Mm-hmm. But I follow what you say as well. But it's also about self-responsibility, mm-hmm. about what or the self-esteem, mm-hmm. and what you want to reach in your life. You know, it's like, you have to see the future doesn't exist no more. So, you know, it's like nobody thinks more than next week.
Yeah.
And then they consume. Like nobody is planting seeds, mm-hmm. no more and waiting till that thing is grow because it takes so much time.
Yeah.
And through internet and antisocial works like Facebook and things like that, you don't have no time. You're always confronted between like one worst things, which gonna be followed by an even worst thing, even like big catastrophe. Mm-hmm. So you forget the first catastrophe.
Yeah.
So that's how it works.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the end, you don't care no more because it's always gonna be worst. And on that point, it's not how I start my life. You know, I was every morning I'm there. I say, oh shit, I'm here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm happy. It's like Germany, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's a good place.
Yeah, it's a good place. That's true. Yeah. You said we were talking about Americans being loud.
Yeah.
You've been working together with somebody who has actually made a very noisy entry into the art world a few years ago and is still up there. It's with his Dean collection and everything. I kind of got to hit that point because I think that a lot of people are interested in how that, you know, sort of took place. And for a lot of people, he is some kind of a myth that you just, of course, you will always ever only experience online through his Instagram post. So that's basically what you believe this person might be, you know? But you're kind of in the inner circle. You did, you know, you have a very personal relationship. How did it all started? And
it started in Instagram, actually.
Yeah.
He saw one piece that I had in by Tui in Sozo Gallery.
Yeah.
And he saw that. I didn't even know. Actually, the story goes farther before because he was coming to Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
And in Berlin, he saw one piece that I had it in one shop there,
mm-hmm.
and he asked for the if the guy knew me,
mm-hmm.
of course he knew me. He called me also, mm-hmm. like Phil called me and said, "Hey Jebo, we got Swizz here, and he wants to meet you." And whatever.
Okay, we're talking about Swizz Beatz. We never.
Oh, sorry. Swizz Beatz. And Swizz is there, and he wants to talk to you about art and everything. And I said, "Yeah, cool, come over."
Mm-hmm.
But he's a busy person and he came too late. And I didn't know who Swizz was.
Yeah.
And at 0.6, I was out of the show and he came like 6:30 or something.
Yeah.
So that was the first contact that we had.
Okay.
Second of it, I was doing this show
in Los Angeles.
In Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw that and he directly said, "I claim this piece. This mm-hmm. piece is mine. This mm-hmm. is what it was online." And everyone was like, "What, Jebo, you made it? That's crazy." Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, okay, you know, happy to have it." And he came.
Mm-hmm.
And he came the second show that I had there. And he came over and said, "I want to meet you." And then I meet all the family from like Alicia and all the guys.
Mm-hmm.
And the good thing by Swizz, this is somebody it's listening.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very good listener. It's somebody who will take time to listen. Mm-hmm. And he's not talking. And it's how he works with his art. We were like that. And there was a point where black artists were still under.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Under the radar somehow. And we had this big discussion to say, "You are impossible to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You are the one can bring
yeah.
something up."
Mm-hmm.
And he did it. That's it. With mm-hmm. Alicia together.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody is always saying things, and he's doing it, which is very, very fundamental in what is working now.
Yeah.
So if he's not saying something, it won't happen as well.
And I have the feeling that he's just doing it for his own purpose, because I don't think he still has to.
You got a message. You got a purpose. You got a goal, and he's gonna be there. And now it's like, he's not anymore interested in white people. Because it's not the thing about like, you have to choose. If you're a collector, you have to find something. And there's a lot of people who needs help, not only in the US, but in Africa. And you can go in every kind. I hope somebody come and say, you're going to find a way to make a Chinese artist that you can recognize what a Chinese artist is, and not like the Chinese artists are now doing West kind of art. So now that they can't find them, some people have to be there, and they are the good ones.
I mean, I'm always saying this. I just remember when you just said, I forgot about it. But I always say people that you don't necessarily sell art over Instagram. And I mean, very rarely this actually happens, like in this case. But I remember that he inquired on a piece of work of mine. It must have been 2015, end of 2015. I was working on a big piece, and a very distinct piece. And he was inquiring about that through Instagram. And at that time, I was not really angry. I thought, I mean, there's so many ways how to connect to me. It's so easy just to, you can even find my phone number. So Instagram was kind of okay.
Yeah, but time is an issue there.
I had one of my best collectors who also mentioned he was interested in a piece. And so I called him and said, listen, this guy from America was interested in buying this work. And he says, no, I mean, I want it. And I said, okay, it's yours. You know? And I think career-wise, probably would have been the better move to sell it to Swiss Beats.
I'm not sure. I mean, just prove you.
My loyalty then was to somebody who's been supporting me for, I don't know, the last 5, 6, 7 years, you know,
also Swiss change a lot. Now he's looking at the piece in front. So he goes there. That was the beginning also with me.
Yeah.
I was there, and the beginning was like almost buying everything he could see, which was like just feeling what he felt. He had a vision, but it's getting stronger and stronger now. It's sculpted, and now he goes there, and it's not buying anything.
It's pretty interesting to see when he his collection is probably not public yet, but I mean his collection of the past years, just give it a few more years if he finds a space where
he's working on it.
Which is what I love about collectors. That's definitely going to be very, very interesting.
I'm completely okay with him. I consider him a friend now, but he's very. You don't have like the history of Europe somehow or like to play with. It's just learning in the same way. That's why I like in it, because it's like learning, but always thinking, and he's learning the history by doing it somehow, and then this is something that I like a lot. Because it's not like we are armies, you know, we're the New Yorker kind of guys, and we know better. So he's like very open for that. And it's also Alicia, which is also a very big influence on him as well. She's a wonderful person as well. And the position where they are, you have to take care about what you do and when you do it. And they are very natural about it. And then that's a good thing. You got this couple of guys there. They're all the same. Obviously, like Jay-Z they're all the same kind of interest there. And it's also a big thing about luxury. Luxury, because they are in luxury. Art, you know, like the good wine, the cars, all the things. This is one pack. We have the tendency always thinking it as one part of it, like art is one part, wine is one part, or the good food or whatever. But actually a big thing when you're on the top, it's all together. And I'm completely the opposite. Like when you come to me, I always like, Jimbo, but I don't understand why you're not rich.
Yeah.
You say, but I am.
Yeah.
You know, and then... I'm completely, I'm not interested. absolutely not. And that's why maybe he likes me. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, okay. We have to ask him. Get him on the podcast. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Do it right now.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe one day.
Yeah, but you have like already a dev with him saying, yeah, once.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's with guests for this podcast. I mean, it's as well. It's something you have to be interested. You have to be curious about it.
And, of course, yeah. But yeah. You know, for him, it's really a time issue.
Of course,
like,
sure.
You don't know how much. I mean, he never blocked. You know, he's somebody who's just like taking almost. You know, it's like also the big. I think we already talked about that once the first time that I saw you about. The difference between fine art and urban art and how the things are moving. He's trying to break it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's still the bridge is still being built between both worlds, even, you know. But yeah, I think the one issue there is that that urban art has gotten so wide, you know, so it's like it's this super huge movement. When you were talking before about people who were into rockabilly, so they had the haircut, they were punks, they were into hip-hop, they were doing graffiti, they were into hip-hop when they were doing graffiti. But also in the beginning, you know, punk, it's all that kind of these different scenes. And you were part of this one scene. And maybe for a girl, you crossed over.
Yeah, true.
But not in any other way. And now art is basically has been trying to get be the big I don't know, the big bracket that actually includes everything. Somebody spraying spray can, working outside, doing all these things, and it's just super huge movement which is very difficult probably to define as fine art at any point, because it's just too broad and there's too many people that have nothing to do with it. You know, I mean, there's an insanely amount of amazingly talented illustrators who can do with a spray can on a 30 meter high wall what, you know, not many people can do, but it's just a beautiful painting on a wall.
Beautiful, we have to define again.
Well, and, mass compatible.
Yeah. I think a good piece is a piece which stays and evaluate in the moment when it stayed. Mm-hmm. Like when the second time you see it, you get something more, and etc. A lot of things that now they are made like the time that we are now. It's like all the things on the walls now are just zeitgeist minute things.
Yeah.
The lifetime that they got is maybe 1 second of swapping something, like tinned art. This is nothing more than that.
Yeah.
And that's the big problem, I think, because more bigger the thing is, more viewers you get, but it's just for a little piece like that.
Yeah.
When you're in front of this wall, which is maybe in Mexico or maybe in Australia or whatever, then you have like a sensation which is there, but it's still a short thing. The piece are not moving. This is something like they are not deep enough, or they are not thinking about the time. They are not. They're not incubated. If you know, it's like we need 9 months to come on the world, and then it's not there. It's just fast, and it's also the same system that we had before, throw ups that we did. That was okay for that time. But now it's the same technique somehow. Yeah, of course, and they got like big projectors and they go there and they got big things and it's going on and everyone is making walls after walls just to gentrifications purpose at the end of the day. And you have to know that when you do a wall, it's big and then you maybe people have to go away because of that.
Yeah, after a while, that's true. Yeah, because the era develops. Yeah, I think, but you know, sort of, I think that's something that.
But it changed.
Yeah.
It's not the same graffiti walls that we had before, you know.
And I mean, it's fine. I don't want us to sound like these two old farts, which we are, but. But it's, I like to think that there's still. At some point, a chance to, I mean, I mean, if somebody like Swiss Beats or like Rick Reinking or other big collectors, when they go and build their museums or their institutions where they can show their art, there will be some kind of a definition being made what maybe belongs into a museum or whatever. And that's, again, where there's some kind of gatekeepers around. And the beauty of now, if you know, I want to say something positive, is that there are not really gatekeepers right now.
Yeah, but the purpose is not to be in museum. I mean, that's why should I go in a museum? I think
the museum will still be the place where things are kept for later.
Yeah, but I don't give a shit about later.
Yeah, me neither. But I think that's the discussion between fine art and urban art. You know, if you think about that once, what is going to be part? I mean, that's still like you mentioned Johan Koenig. You know, so like he still works. That every artist that comes to him will end up in a museum. He will actually buy the piece and put it in the museum. Yeah, yeah. So that he's the reason why it's in the museum, not necessarily because it's relevant art. He defines that it's relevant art. And that's what I mean right now. The beauty also is that it is basically a lot of people are not thinking about
it. No, we say that, but he's doing just money. This is just what he wants. Yeah. This is nothing, and he's honest with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm... You just have to tell me what you want to do with me. But if you tell it and you stay like that, that's great. All the purpose of doing art to make you staying after your death, I don't get that.
Yeah, no, I don't get that either.
So I'm not Tutankhamon, Pharaoh, or whatever. No. I don't believe in God as people believe. Maybe, I don't know. And I'm not complaining, or just let them do it. But
it's a weird concept to think about that your art might be relevant.
This is actually the next work that I'm doing. I'm working on this disappearing, as I said, and it's exactly about that. It's like we are more interesting on the thing which just disappeared, on the thing which are around us.
Yeah.
We don't care about. We care about the Amazon forest when it's burning. Before. And we don't care no more. I mean, it's
still burning. Yeah.
We don't know. In Africa, it's burning as well. Nobody cares. Mm-hmm. So this is things which I'm completely disappointed about our times.
Mm-hmm.
And we are more interested. Like I did this collage with a photograph.
Mm-hmm.
Then now I'm painting them after that. But like it's just putting the main concept away and then glue them together or tack them together. Mm-hmm. And you see that. So you got like an empty place, which is wrong because you know exactly that something is missing.
Mm-hmm.
And you got this feeling that it's like, it's what I call amnesia about reality. We are completely in this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I'm working on. And our times, and now we are going away from that.
Mm-hmm.
We're not thinking about we are here. We are thinking about what's gone, or I need more of what's not there. Restrain yourself again. Be happy with the fucking sun.
Yeah. Well, I think that's it's a beautiful word to close this conversation.
All right.
I mean, I like this, the art of disappearing, and I think that's a much more important goal than being dead for 200 years and still hanging in a museum.
Yeah, definitely. You have to work on yourself more than on your art.
Yeah.
Second conclusion.
Well, we can go on like this. Jay, well, thank you very much. Thank you so much for spending time with me here.
You're welcome.
Helium Talk.